What ho there. Well, that familiar music introduces another segment of Monitor 65. I'm your host, Gene Rayburn. I'd like to ask you this. If a man is willing to tell a lie in one situation, can we assume that he'll lie in another situation? And under what circumstances should one person inform on another? Well, they're tough questions. We'll be hearing how one military man, Admiral Arleigh Burke, would answer them. That'll be 2 minutes from now. And if you're thinking that these questions have a direct relation to recent events at the U.S. Air Force Academy, you're dead right. Bossa Nova style duck, the duck. The immediate repercussions over the cheating scandal at the U.S. Air Force Academy have died down, and now come the longer range evaluations of what happened, why, and the speculations about the future of the military honor code. Admiral Arleigh Burke, an Annapolis graduate and former chief of naval operations, had some personal experiences with the honor code himself when he was a midshipman. He also has some very strong personal views about what the nation can expect from its officer corps. Monitor reporter Ray Farkas gets the story.
Admiral Burke, an honor code such as that of the Air Force Academy, which says that we will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those among us who do. Isn't such an honor code rather tough to live up to in today's society?
Yes, of course it's tough to live up to. But when you take men into battle and your decisions that you make is determined by what men tell you, by what your officers tell you, you had better be pretty sure that you have absolute trust and confidence in the accuracy of their reports. In a military service, in any military service, Air Force, Army, Navy, any military service at all, the officer corps must have a very rigid code of honor so that when an officer says something, does something, it can be absolutely relied upon. There is nothing worse in a military service than a liar or a thief.
You feel that such an honor code which says that you must report others who you see cheating. Isn't this against the grain of much of what today's youth is brought up with, that you have to snitch on others?
No, maybe. Maybe, I don't know. That's, of course, where the difficulty comes. Certainly you don't want people to report on very minor incidences, very minor errors that other people do. This is a question of judgment. What do you report and what do you not report?
Where would you draw the line?
Where I draw the line and where I think most naval officers draw the line is that if it affects the United States or the morality of people or the integrity of the service or people in the service, then they should be reported.
You attended Annapolis, Admiral Burke. You were president, in fact, of the class of 1923. Did you, in your years at Annapolis, run into any instances of cheating?
Oh, yes.
And what happened?
They were dismissed. And they were reported and dismissed.
Did you yourself ever find yourself in the position of having to report someone?
Yes.
And you did?
Sure.
Do you remember the circumstances?
Yes, and I'm not going to repeat them now.
All right.
But we had an honor committee. And I was a member of the honor committee. And these cases come up before the honor committee. And if a man, one of your classmates or one of your people in the Naval Academy that you know of an incident, you call this man up before the honor committee, you charge him with the incident and ask him, is it true or is it not? Now, I never had a case where a man lied about whether he did or did not cheat or do something that was immoral. He said yes.
Once he'd been caught.
Once he had been charged. And then the thing, the only thing that you can do, and the thing that should be done, is to ask, is to report it, and he's dismissed.
Is it possible, in your estimation, for a man to go through, say, one of the service academies, cheat and not get caught, and in the end turned out to be a good soldier or a sailor, a good officer?
It's possible, but I doubt it. If a man is willing to lie on one occasion, the chances are, not necessarily so, of course, but the chances are that he will lie in the future. Certainly nobody is perfect. But what I'm driving at, what I think is true, is that there are at least very few people who deliberately cheat who make out in the services. I think they're found out other ways, not necessarily by cheating, but they're found out that they're a fraud.
Thank you, Admiral Arleigh Burke, former Chief of Naval Operations. This is Ray Farkas in Washington, returning you to Monitor.
And we urge you to keep tuned to Monitor for our continuing coverage of the Ranger 8 moonshot. That'll be coming along your way in just a few minutes. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Your all-night host is Long John Nebel on the conversation station WNBC, AM and FM, New York. Consider the case of the stolen ring that was not missing. A packing room clerk took his watch to a jeweler for repair. Spotting an amethyst ring on the young man's finger, the jeweler had him arrested, swearing the ring was part of the loot taken from his store in a recent holdup. Unable to make bail, the youth spent 5 days in jail before his trial. He told the legal aid lawyer assigned to protect his rights that he bought the ring from a sidewalk vendor. Fish story? Perhaps. But the lawyer figured if it were stolen, the boy wouldn't flash it in front of the jeweler. The legal aid lawyer investigated the police list of the articles stolen from the jeweler. No amethyst ring was listed as missing. Case dismissed. Thanks to thorough and proper legal aid. Help protect the rights of other needy people. Send a contribution to the Legal Aid Society, 11 Park Place, New York City. Legal Aid, 11 Park Place.
Gene Rayburn once again with Monitor 65, and next it's Monitor on Stage. Star performances recorded live at leading theaters and nightclubs around the world. Now here are the Brothers Four with a new version of the old favorite, Frankie and Johnny, recorded on their cross-country tour of college campuses.
Frankie, she was a fine-looking woman, had a man named Johnny, and she loved him. She bought him a car and a suit of clothes, don't you see them? Walking arm in arm down a long canal street, Frankie loved Johnny more than everyone. Laredo. She came home one evening just a little bit early, and she thought, I'm gonna stop at the corner for a bottle of beer. So she stopped there, and she told her trouble to the fat bartender. Said, tell me that daddy has my lovin' Johnny Man been here. He said, Frankie, well, I'm awful sorry you asked me that question, you know. I'm about as honest as ever man can be. I thought Johnny, he was a-walking down Main, and a-feeling no pain, just slipping and a-sliding with a gal named Annabelle Lee. Well, Frankie, she said, oh, no, no, well, it can't be so, 'cause I know my loving man, he wouldn't treat me wrong. So she sat there, she had a few more beers, shed a few more tears, said, I'm the best woman that scoundrel ever had. Then Frankie, she got into the taxi and she said to the driver, said, listen, don't you stop for nothing on the way downtown. I got a 45 here and I'm making it clear I'm looking for the man who's giving me the run around. Well, Frankie, she got out of South Park Street and looked in the window and she saw Johnny and Annabelle swinging there. So Frankie, she took deadly aim, well, that deadly aim, she shot her man in the middle of his big affair. Now you heard the story about Frankie and her man named Johnny, and you know that was a game should have never been played. And the moral of this sad tale I'm a-telling you, if you're gonna fool around, then you better pull the shade. If you're gonna fool around, you better pull the shade.
Monitor on stage, where the Brothers Four recorded live. Now a monitor tip. If you're planning to polish your car, beware of the power buffer. By all means, use one to polish the smooth surfaces of your automobile, the straight planes. But when it comes to polishing those edges or ridges, use hand power, not horsepower. If you use a power buffer on those spots, you could find that you've buffed the paint right off. So be careful. And that's your monitor tip. Now, as we continue, let's hear again from California, where Ranger moonshot scientists are evaluating results from today's astoundingly successful space mission. NBC science editor Dr. Albert Hibbs is standing by with Dr. Eugene Shoemaker, one of the Ranger experimenters and chairman of the astrogeological branch of the U.S. Geological Survey. So let's switch to Dr. Hibbs at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
This is an interview with Gene Shoemaker and Al Hibbs, take one. This is Al Hibbs, and I'm in the auditorium at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. With me is Dr. Eugene Shoemaker, one of the experimenters on the Ranger 8 photographic mission that just returned to Earth more than 7,000 close-up pictures of the surface of the moon. Gene, I know that you have been working for many years developing geological theories of the structure of the moon and the moon's surface. In these photographs you've seen from Ranger 7 and now from Ranger 8, do you see substantiation for your ideas, or do you see the ideas destroyed in any way? How have they been affected by these photos?
Well, Al, it's possible to derive two kinds of ideas about the moon's surface by studying it through the telescope prior to the Ranger successful missions. One of these ideas has to do with the large structure of the moon's surface. And this is not basically changed by Ranger. In fact, Ranger doesn't provide a great deal of new evidence on it. This has to do with the large features on the moon's surface. The other theory has to do with a fine structure of the moon's surface and the development of a thin layer that is probably produced all over the moon by the repeated formation of small craters. The results from Ranger 7 and Ranger 8 have been rather gratifying to me in terms of the model or theory which we were attempting to develop in the Geological Survey prior to the Ranger flights. Needless to say, we've had to re-examine this theory in detail, modify it in places, I think we have very much improved understanding now of the moon's surface, and this model enables us to predict a number of interesting things.
Incidentally, what do you think that thickness is?
It varies from place to place. Along the ridges and crater rims, the old crater rims, it is probably not more than 1 or 2 or possibly 3 feet thick. But I am convinced now that in the centers of certain very shallow craters, which are up to about 1,000 feet across, there probably is an accumulation of finely divided or pulverized material with local pieces of coarser rock that may be as thick as 50 to 100 or even 200 feet.
Well, this finely divided material you talk about, is this the lunar dust that there's been quite a bit of conversation about recently? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, most people, I think, would call this dust. It's not yet clear whether it's all dust or whether it's dust mixed with other fragments of rock that would range on up in size to pieces or chunks the size of a man's fist and pieces much larger than that. It's a mixture of rock fragments, in other words.
Well, how would this seem to someone walking through it? Is this the sort of dust that an astronaut would sink into as he walked around on the moon?
Well, as Dr. Urey mentioned earlier in the conference, it's really not possible to tell by looking at the pictures what the bearing strength in the material is going to be. The reason is that we do not know what the effects of the lunar environment would be on such a fragmental layer. There is good reason to speculate that under the very hard vacuum at the lunar surface, the particles will tend to stick together. And furthermore, the solar radiation striking the moon's surface might tend to weld these particles together somewhat, so that it might be rather firm underfoot. Obviously, there's only one way to find out, and that's to put a spacecraft down on the surface and test it.
I see. Sort of a spongy mass, then, that you'll actually have to poke your way into before you can tell how hard it is.
Well, I would guess that it might sink into a couple of inches or less if you walked across the top surface. That is the ordinary parts of the surface. We know it's very porous from the telescopic measurements of heat radiated from the surface and also from some of the other physical measurements made through the telescope. This might be reasonably weak to the man, to the pressure of a man's footprint or of the touchdown footprint of the lunar excursion module, but my guess is that you would not sink into it more than a few inches.
I knew that at the time that the first Ranger pictures were taken, there was some surprise as to, over the fact that there were so few craters, so few of the little craters, that most of the area was not covered by overlapping craters. Again, this showed up in Ranger 8. Was this a surprise to you, or did you anticipate that the small, relatively small number of small craters?
Well, I was surprised at Ranger 7. I think that was my biggest surprise, and this is why we had to go back and look at the theory again.
Thank you very much for telling us about your interpretation, as much as you've had a chance to interpret, that is, of these recent Ranger 8 photographs. And this is Dr. Albert Hibbs, NBC science editor at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and now back to Monitor in Radio Central.
We'll be staying with the Ranger 8 story throughout this evening. Tomorrow, too, Monitor will present regular news reports on Ranger developments. Caravan there by Billy Vaughn in the orchestra.
My pocketbook with all my vacation money.
How much?
$200 in traveler's checks. But American Express replaced them all that morning. I didn't...
Carry American Express traveler's checks. The safe money. Safer than cash. Prompt refund if lost or stolen. Buy them where you bank. Only a penny per dollar. And they're good everywhere. Buy American Express traveler's checks.